WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Immigration policy has become a key issue in the presidential campaign, particularly among Republican candidates. An effort to overhaul federal immigration law in Congress collapsed last summer, and many states and local governments are enacting their own immigration statutes. Meanwhile, there are huge backlogs in processing applications for citizenship among legal immigrants. For some perspective on the issue, we turn to Julia Preston, the national immigration correspondent for the New York Times. Before covering immigration in the United States, Preston spent several years reporting from Mexico. She spoke with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies.
Well, Julia Preston, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, of course, there was a huge effort in Congress to pass a comprehensive immigration bill, which failed earlier this year. But apart from that effort, to what extent has the executive branch of the government undertaken steps to deport more immigrants, exercise greater control over them, their lives?
Well, this is something that I think is not well understood. The beginning of what we could call a crackdown, particularly at the southern border with Mexico, didn't begin with the Bush administration. It didn't begin just in the last few years, but it really began with the Clinton administration. And part of what we're seeing now, this intense concern about immigration and specifically illegal immigration, is a consequence of some of the unintended effects of that early enforcement. In other words, we have been tightening our border really since the mid-1990s. And one of the effects of that has been that, especially from Mexico, what used to be a kind of a circular migration of people coming and going, farm workers, seasonal labor in factories, that kind of thing, is no longer seasonal and cyclical. People can get in, or they did succeed in getting in, but now they are not going home because the costs of and risks of returning have become very high.
Give us an example of that, of how a family might have used the border before that crackdown. And what happens now?
Well, the traditional sources of migration from Mexico are states like Michoacán and Guanajuato, Jalisco. These are states that have been sending farm workers to the United States on a seasonal basis for generations. And the pattern was that those workers would come for the agricultural season, leave their families in Mexico, and make, by their standards, a lot of money, and then take it home and create their lives in Mexico. But the increasing enforcement of the border has meant that that's not an option, that process of leaving your family in Mexico and going home regularly. The people used to go home to Mexico two or three times a year. So now they feel that they have to remain in the United States, partly also because there was a job boom, for example, in California, so that farm workers could find work in construction and other industries during the winter. And so they started to bring their families here. And then you have kids that are born in the United States to immigrant families and with illegal immigrant parents. And then they're in school and there's settlement. A surprising number of immigrants, for example, in the Chicago area have purchased houses, even though they don't have Social Security numbers. So there's been a whole settlement that has been an uncalculated impact of the enforcement of the border.
So if I understand you, what you're saying is that in the past, people would slip back and forth illegally, I assume, but relatively easily. But now it's a riskier crossing, so they make one great leap with their families and settle here.
Yes, that has been increasingly the pattern. Of course, what has happened in the last year, and especially since the failure of what was called comprehensive reform in the Senate, there has been a much escalated effort to crack down on illegal immigration. And this past year, there was a record number of arrests of illegal immigrants, I think more than 38,000 illegal immigrants in various categories were arrested. And the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is the law enforcement arm of our immigration policy, has become the second largest federal law enforcement agency. They've been tremendously active creating teams to hunt down what they call fugitive aliens, that is, people who came across the border and were caught and let go and then came into the country anyway. It's just been an extremely active agency, and the effect of that has really been felt very strongly in immigrant communities.
It sounds as if what you're saying is the consequence of the effort to reduce illegal immigration by tightening the border actually had the paradoxical effect of increasing illegal immigration.
I wouldn't say that it increased illegal immigration. What I would say is that it was not dissuasive for many years, and it did discourage people from going home. So what it definitely encouraged was settlement of immigrants, both legal and illegal, in the United States. And so really all of the political tensions that we're seeing now, I think, arise not so much out of the conflict between American workers and immigrants and illegal immigrants in the workplace, although there is some of that. But really it has to do with the presence of so many people that are here without legal status in our communities. So what has really riled many Americans is when you're starting to get large numbers of Spanish-speaking children in the school system, and you have to deal with that. And you have community issues, the hospital, the emergency room. These are the flashpoints. This is a major law and order issue for many people. In a context where you have American working class people who are living in a period of great uncertainty in their lives, and people ask the question, which is, I think, a fair question, why should I, the taxpayer, be called upon to support people who are not in the country legally?
You know, you mentioned that people object to illegal immigrants and the drain they are on resources, but you also said that it's a law and order issue. Are illegal immigrants more prone to breaking the law, to committing violent crimes?
No, not at all. At least statistically, they're not. But when you think of it as a political issue, it becomes a more complex question. Because, for example, among the population of illegal immigrants who are in the United States are a large number of very dangerous gang members from the Mara Salvatrucha and some of these Central American and Mexican gangs that have extended their influence into the United States. And so this is a very small part of the population overall, but they are very prominent in the minds of some people who live in the communities where they're active. The problem is that the illegal status of these immigrants makes it a very difficult issue to sort out at a time when Americans are increasingly concerned about the rule of law. And the other problem with the issue in political terms and in moving towards a solution is that it's been very divisive between the states and the federal government. So you have great frustration at the state level because there's a resource problem. The federal government failed to enforce the border, hasn't passed any new immigration law, and yet the states are having to deal with the hospitals in many cases and the school systems that are facing new challenges because of the new immigration. And so it creates a tension and a distrust between the states and the federal government and people at the state level that is also becoming part of this very toxic political mix that we have now.
We're speaking with Julia Preston. She is the New York Times national immigration correspondent. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Julia Preston. She is a journalist for the New York Times covering the immigration issue. Well, I wanted to talk a bit about some of the ways that this crackdown has affected foreign nationals living in the United States. I mean, one of the things that you have written is that relatively minor infractions can get foreign nationals in really big trouble. How? What do you mean? Yeah.
Well, first of all, one of the things that's happened is that you have a population of almost 12 million people who are illegal immigrants who are very sensitive to the law enforcement environment and are basically retreating from community life all over the country. You've created in a very short period of time a kind of semi-fugitive population in cities all over the country. What do I mean by that? People who think twice every time they go out of the house, people who don't go to parties, who are reluctant to go to school meetings, who think twice about going to the police to report something that they saw in the neighborhood, people who avoid the police, that really will go out of their way to take a different route to avoid any kind of contact with the police on the highway. And so this is one thing that it really is causing a really dramatic change, I think, in the quality of life and the feeling of engagement in our society in immigrant communities across the country. One of the ways that you see that, for example, was a Pew Hispanic Center survey that came out in December that 53% of the Hispanic people in the United States feel that they or a loved one could be deported or is facing the risk of deportation. And that raises the other thing that's happening, which is that because so much of this has to do with settlement and immigrant settlement in our communities, you don't get illegal immigrants who are kind of off in the corner. What you get is a mixed status family. So you have three or four children who were born in the United States. You have a father who is a legal immigrant, a mother who does not have legal papers. So the impact when you start to crack down on illegal immigrants really radiates out across the Hispanic community.
And it becomes more isolated.
Yes.
And do you think that's destructive for the communities that they inhabit?
Well, it's certainly a risk. I mean, what we're talking about is something that is acutely felt, but quite short term. It would be, I think, fanciful to say at this point that this is something that's affecting assimilation. But the issue going forward is this what we want to continue, or do we want to solve the problem in a different way by finding ways to reincorporate these people back into our social mainstream? And, of course, that's the great issue that is under political debate at this point.
You know, you've written that one of the manifestations of this crackdown is that you will see an immigrant who gets stopped for a taillight being out on his pickup truck ends up in an interaction with a police officer and admitting to being an illegal immigrant, which years ago might have gone unprosecuted, now gets him thrown in the jail and then put in the hands of immigration authorities. And so you have thousands of people now being in this process for potential deportation. Can the Immigration and Customs Enforcement folks handle all these people?
Well, before I address that, I just want to say I remember that man who was deported because he had a taillight who was out. I met him in a jail in Colorado. And it was a remarkable experience because he was not at all bitter. He said, in jail, about to be deported because of this completely minor traffic violation, he said, I'm just very grateful to the United States that I had an opportunity to be here for 8 years. I put my kids through primary school. I made more money than I could ever make in my country. It was just a very memorable experience about the complexities of this and really the extraordinary people who have been caught up in it. Certainly one of the characteristics that is irrefutably true about the vast majority of people who are illegal immigrants living in this country is that they would much prefer to be legal. If there had been a legal channel, I'm sure they would have taken it. In addition to that, the many millions of people who are struggling their way through the legal immigration system are subject to interminable waits, multiple disappointments, their papers get lost. I mean, even the most routine case is sometimes very difficult. So Citizenship and Immigration Services is an agency that is trying to do its job. But, for example, they don't get any money as a matter of policy from the federal government. It's a fee-based agency. And so suddenly in the last year, for example, you had this enormous surge of legal immigrants who wanted to become American citizens. This is what we want as a nation.
That surge is driven by the crackdown?
Yes, in part. It's partly a demographic issue because there were many Mexicans who became eligible. They've been legal permanent residents for a period of time. And also there was a major fee increase that went into effect in the middle of this year, and that had something to do with it, too. It was the combination of this very uncertain environment created by the political debate with the knowledge that suddenly it was going to become more expensive. And because they feel insecure in their status, even as legal immigrants. Once you become a citizen, nobody can take that away from you. We're over a million people this year who have applied to become citizens.
Is the federal government going to do anything to relieve that backlog?
Well, they are going to have to. Currently, the surge is so great that the prospect is that all these people who have rushed to come forward, many of whom did so because they are very keen to vote in November, won't be able to because of bureaucratic hang-up that will prevent them from getting their citizenship in time to register to vote. So this is really counterproductive. We say that we want assimilation and we want people to accept our values and join our society, and yet we make it a complete bureaucratic nightmare for them to do so.
I wanted to ask you about one interesting development that has occurred a lot during this crackdown. Children who are born in the United States are considered citizens, even if they are born to parents who are illegal immigrants. And there have been a number of cases where sweeps capture people who are illegal immigrants, but their kids are citizens and entitled to stay in the states. What sort of dilemmas does that present?
Well, very troubling ones, I think. You have, with these increasing thousands of illegal immigrants being deported, most often these are people who have families. And we like to think that they were people who came recently, but what you find is that these are illegal immigrants who have been living in this country and working in this country for a decade or more, 8, 9 years, and they have one or two children who were born in the United States. And so now we're in a situation where we are, in effect, deporting substantial numbers of United States citizens overseas. I think we haven't even begun to think about the implications of that. They will not lose their citizenship, and so it's very likely that they may come back one day to live in this country. Who knows what that experience might do of having been rejected by your own country when you were a small child.
But the kids are legally entitled to stay if someone asserts that right on their behalf, right?
They're legally entitled to stay, but the parents don't want to be separated from their children, although it is a very wrenching decision because in many cases the parents come thinking that their goal is to work and make money and send that money home. But when the children are born in this country, then they get into school and the parents see that the children have educational opportunities here that they would never have in their home countries. And that becomes an additional driving force and motive for many illegal immigrant parents. And so leaving that behind is also very heartbreaking.
I know that you spent a long time in Mexico covering political events there, and I'm just wondering how that experience informs your understanding of the immigration issue. I mean, I know this is a broad question, but is there some fundamental insight that you get from seeing the issue south of the border?
Well, just that people from Mexico have made our two countries into a region. We have what has been essentially a unified labor market involving people, especially from northern Mexico. And yet, even though the possibilities for understanding and integration and cooperation have never been greater between our two countries, in the period of time since I came back from Mexico in 2001, things have just become more and more distant. And I think it's really unnecessary. For example, the border, We cannot, we will never succeed in enforcing our border or getting the kind of control over the southern border that we want without the cooperation of Mexico. And Mexico has expressed rare willingness in the past few years to really step up and play its part to enforce that border. But they won't do it unless they get better recognition from Washington for the effort, unless it's part of some kind of a very substantial bilateral discussion. And instead, what's happened is that in the course of the debate, you know, Mexico as a country has just been denigrated and belittled, and it's really very distressing.
Well, Julia Preston, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Julia Preston is the New York Times national immigration correspondent. She spoke with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies. He's senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News.